The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast, back at the Vintage Conservatory. I'll give them a shout out, an incredible private wine club in Toronto. Super exclusive, but that makes it seem snobby. It's actually really nice, really pretty, really down to earth, right on King, a really beautiful view. And joining me now, we are joined from Taylor Fladgate. We'll get George Ramos to answer that, because sort of a funny story first. George, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Great. Thanks. Great to be here.
Let's start here. If we were in Portugal, you would be saying your name the correct way. You'd be rolling R's and be a lot more accurate than the way I just pronounced it here in Toronto. So if we were in Portugal, how would you be saying your full name?
Olá, bom dia. Meu nome é George Ramos.
See, you say it so much better. Just as I was joking before, the next R that I roll will be the first R that I roll. So before we get into the wines, and we're going to be trying your entry level white and red. Then we'll be doing the 2019 LBV port, and then the Taylor Fladgate 20 Ertani, which is always my favorite. Like, for price and quality, 20 for me just hits all the notes. Well, we'll get there. But I first want to start with you, your relationship with Taylor Fladgate.
So I've worked for Taylor Fladgate, for the group, for roughly 18 years now. Taylor Fladgate is a family-run company, eighth-generation family members. Taylor Fladgate and Yeatman is the full name of the company, and currently eighth-generation family members from the Yeatman side are still very much involved in the company. Besides Taylor Fladgate, the group owns Fonseca and Croft. We have the three oldest wine, or the one of the oldest wine groups and companies in Porto. Taylor Fladgate founded in 1692, Fonseca in 1815, and last but not least, the oldest port house, Croft, founded in 1588.
That's crazy just how old that is. And I mean, a lot of that was just these companies were created because people, sailors, needed spirits when they were traveling, you know, for months and months and months on end. I know that's simplistic, but whenever I think about port, that's always the first image I get, is we need something that can transport and isn't going to go bad.
Exactly. And so at the time, what the easiest way to get the product to final destination that was being exported from the north of Portugal to the UK at the time was by fortifying the wines with the clear neutral grape spirit, that 77% alcohol. The wine, the 77% grape spirit that we still use today, kills the fermenting yeast in the yeast and fermenting wine, able for the wines to be transported. At the time, they were transported in barrels and casks. So because of the longer and harsher voyage between Portsmouth and the UK, the barrels would burst open from that second fermentation stage. Plus, the sailors would drink a lot of wine during the voyage. So very, very little was getting to final destination. And that's pretty much what port is today. It's a sweet fortified wine. All port is 20% alcohol. All port is sweet due to the natural sugars in the grapes. We have different styles of port that we will cover a little bit.
Yeah, I want to do a full, just, you know, a Cole's notes for people that are just getting into port, and so they can understand the difference. But first, I'm a bad host. I didn't even give you a job title. So you're export sales manager for Taylor Fladgate, and I'm wondering, How often do you find yourself in a plane?
Quite often, once a week, once every 2 weeks, depending on the time of year. This time, fall is quite busy for us. So 2 weeks ago, I was traveling for roughly a week in China, south to north. Last week, I was in Sweden. Toronto, I arrived on Sunday and will be here for 4 days and fly back home on home, which is Porto, on Friday.
How often do you wake up in the morning and you need a second to remind yourself where in the world you are?
happens more often than I'd like. This time around, it's a little bit easier because I am in one city for more than 4 days. But sometimes when I'm hopping around, such as 2 weeks ago in China, where it's literally in a different city each evening, it's like, okay, where am I? Am I further north or further south?
And George, I'd like to hear a little bit more about your background, how it led to you, your journey to Taylor Fladgate. If you're working for these guys, if you're traveling all over the world, you have a passion for this product, for wine, for port, and all things in between. How did you get started?
I moved to Portugal. My wife convinced me 22 years ago I should move to Porto, where she lived at the time and we currently live today. We met in New York at Carnegie Hall roughly 24 years ago, did long distance relationship for about 9 months, and at the time, no FaceTime or WhatsApp or
that's tough. That's just long distance phone calls and emails.
Exactly. So at the time I was living in New York, she was living in Porto, and so my phone bill was higher than most people's rents at the time. So
young people have no idea that long distance phone calls was a big deal. It's like, okay, we're going to talk. We got 20 minutes and that's it.
Exactly. Landline. Exactly. So I happily moved to Porto. It was just easier for me to move from New York to Porto. And when in Porto, one works for a port company. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 18 years, responsible for many different markets throughout the world. And currently, as of 4 months ago, responsible once again for the Canadian market.
Your appreciation of port must have just changed so much from when you first met your wife to when we're sitting here.
Yes, absolutely. And port is quite unique because it is it's the oldest demarcated and regulated region in the world, dating back to 1756. The region itself is subdivided into three regions, the Douro Superior, the one closest to Spain, Sima Corgo, right in the center, and the Baixo Corgo, the oldest of the three sub-regions. And port is also unique because it's the only wine in the world where you have the vineyards and winemaking in one location, and then 200 kilometers west, you have the aging, the blending, and the export. And also quite versatile. We have port is not complicated. It shouldn't be complicated. And there, that is why I'm in the market, providing more information on port. Port is quite simple. It's two grand categories, Rui ports and Tawny ports. Rui ports age in large vats, 20,000 liter vats, so fresh and fruity. And Tawny ports age in smaller casks, so 600 liter casks, which essentially you have less wine, more wood surface, more oxidation, more evaporation, and you have more time in those casks. So they are nuttier and mellow. So more like somewhat like people. When you're young, it's fresh and fruity. When you're old, it's mellow and nutty.
That's a good way of putting it. We also want to, I want to try your white and your red, but let's stay with port. When people see, for instance, we're going to be trying a late bottle vintage. When someone sees LBV, what should they be expecting?
Right. So with the two grand styles of port, if you will, and we have two here, if we start with Ruby ports, the very best port that a port house can make is a vintage port. So within the Ruby subcategory. And then just below that, in terms of quality, you have what's called single quinta or single estate wines. In the case for Taylor Fladgate, it's called Quinta de Vargelis. And then just below that is late bottle vintage. Late bottle vintage is a category that Taylor Fladgate created in 1970. For North America. For North Americans that necessarily have the patience to age a vintage port. So late bottle vintage is a wine from a very good year. In this case, we have the 2019 late bottle vintage. And this wine has been aged for 5 years in those large vats. So once we release it, it's ready to drink. We've done the aging for you at our cellars. It's from a single year, a very good year. And once open, the wines, if you're not able to consume them within the day that you open the bottle, these wines will last for anywhere between 6 to 8 weeks once open.
Actually, that's really handy. So for the LBVs, 6 to 8 weeks, if someone has an open bottle of vintage port, how long, what's the clock for that?
So vintage port is the only port that we make that should, that's not filtered and has that ageability. So a classic vintage or a, in our case, it'll just say Taylor Fladgate vintage. And a vintage port is a house by house declaration. Unlike, for example, in France with Champagne, where a Champagne declaration is an AOC on any given year, with port, a vintage declaration is a house-by-house decision. So for us at Taylor Fladgate, we've declared on average 3 times a decade in the last 200 years. So it's when a wine is of very good quality, but not only quality, also the ageability. We're looking for those wines to age up to 100 years or even further. And those are the wines, those are the only wines that we do not filter. And those are the wines that we bottle, we cork with a natural driven cork. So those wines should be aged on their sides. So the bottle laying down, and once open, those wines, those vintage ports, whether classic vintage or a single pinned wines, should be consumed as you would a table wine.
And what are some of the main factors for the house when they declare? I know 2009 was one of the vintages.
Yes.
What would be about that year that the people in charge, the winemakers, would decide this is suitable for vintage?
It has to do primarily with the climatic conditions of that particular year. With vintage port, all vintage port is bottled 2 years after the harvest. So during the 2 years prior to us making the decision whether to declare a classic vintage or not, we have the wines aging in 20,000 liter vats by lot or by vineyard. So we're really seeing how the wines are aging, how they're coming along, how they're developing. And really, 2 years after, right about around March, we're starting to get to that blend with the winemakers and getting to that final blend and making a decision. At Taylor Fladgate, the declaration is made every year on the decision to declare, sorry, the announcement to declare or not declare vintage is made every year on April 23rd, St. George's Day.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions that people would have with port? Because it doesn't get a lot of the same attention. There's, you know, the stereotype that it's just something that old British men, you know, drink late at night. I don't share that opinion, but then again, I'm biased. Well, what are some of the misconceptions out there?
That port is seasonal and it should be consumed by the fireplace over a certain age group and, you know, December, January kind of thing, which is not correct. Port is not seasonal. Port is a great dessert wine. It's a wine that pairs very well with dessert, and dessert is not seasonal. So dessert is consumed year-round. It's a much better experience if you're having your creme brulee with a bottle of, with a glass of 20-year tawny, or a cheesecake, or cheese, or chocolate cake with a glass of late bottle vintage. So we're de-seasonalizing it and really breaking down the barriers with port. Port is great during the spring and summer, slightly chilled, the tawnies, great aperitif, or as dessert. Many people are on diets these days, so I like a nice a glass of 20-year tail flagging 20-year tawny as an alternative to dessert.
I think the basic way to put it is you can drink port in July. It's fine. It will pair well with the month of July.
Absolutely. And we have different styles of port. We have Taylor Fladgate in 1934 created the world's first dry white port called Taylor Fladgate Chip Dry as a way to have that move port forward in the meal and as an aperitif. Currently, you can have it, I like it neat, super cold, super chilled, neat, but you can have it in a tall glass over ice with tonic water. In Portugal, the Portuguese consume it what's called port tonic, so dry white port over ice with a bit of tonic and mint leaf or lemon or lime. So it's super easy. I personally at home always have a bottle of 10 or 20 or both on the refrigerator door, and when I have guests over, serve it as an aperitif.
What do you guys have? 10, 20, I imagine 30 and 40?
Absolutely. We do the full range. Yeah. We are one of the oldest port houses dating back to 1692. And as a family owned company, we're able to make the decisions to set aside more wines for the generations to come. So we have a wide range of tawny ports aging in casks, so 600 liter casks. Since I mean, we have wines dating back to the mid 1800s in those small 600 liter casks. So we are able to bring to market 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 year old, as well as an 80 year old tawny port.
I've tried 50, that's the oldest. It's a wild experience. And I do mean the word wild because it just, you could have 17 different adjectives for what it smells like and maybe 20 on the palate. It's crazy. But for most people, if they're going to be buying tawny, it's probably going to be 10 or 20.
Exactly.
What's the big difference? If someone's tasting 10 versus 20, what are going to be the things that are going to stand out in those versus those two?
So basically, all port is made the exact same way. As I mentioned, it's a fortified wine, so we halt the fermentation of the wines of the fermenting grape must between the second and the third day by adding a clear neutral spirit. So all port, whether ruby or tawny, is made exactly the same way. What happens is what dictates the style is essentially how in what type of container we age the wines in. So all port is aged in wood. It's a neutral wood in the sense that we are not looking for any flavors or nuances from the wood. These are barrels that we've had for 100, 200 years. We reuse everything. Nothing goes to waste. So basically with tawny ports, they're aged in those small casks. So more oxidation, more evaporation, have about 2-3% evaporation rate on an annual basis. And as those wines are aging in those casks, they're aging by year. So unlike, for example, sherry, where you have the Solera system with port, the wines are aged by year always. So the blending of the tawnies, the 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, and even 80, the blending occurs just prior to bottling. In a 10-year-old wine that is a blend of many different years to get to that 10-year-old flavor profile and color profile, we're looking still at wines that have some acidity, some fresh fruit that are now taking on more of the orange peel flavors, if you will. Mm-hmm. Age at 20, which we'll have the opportunity to taste in a few minutes, you have more of the caramel butterscotch flavors. At 30 and 40, more of the walnuts, the raisins, chocolate, more of than at 50, the what's happening is as the wines are aging, they're losing that fresh fruit and they're losing that color, and the color is getting lighter and you have less and more of the dry fruit flavors coming through.
We'll try them in a second. Let's go to the white. It's certainly a much newer project for you than the ports. What do people need to know about the white wines, that I have in my hand here that will be coming to market, will be coming to the LCBO, and you can find them online as well.
So this is a relatively new project for us. Traditionally, at Taylor Fladgate, we're dedicated to producing the finest ports in the world, and that's how we are set up in terms of our estates and the vineyards that we have. So at Taylor Fladgate, we have the average age of the vine is over 85 years of age. We have vines that are over 100 years old, and none of the vines that produce port are irrigated. So when we decided to move to making a dry white, for us at Yellow Flag, it made sense to go to a different region. So we had an opportunity a few years ago to buy a company that had projects in three separate regions in Portugal, in Vinho Verde, in the extreme north of Portugal, in Bairrada and Douro, so two regions south of the Douro. One relatively close to the coast, Bairrada, which is famous for also not only wines, but also sparkling wines. And then further inland, the Douro region. And so this is a new project for us. And the first wine, the white wine that we're tasting now, that we'll taste now, is from the Minho. It's from the Vinho Verde region. So it's Portugal's largest region, probably the one of the most well-known ones, regions in Canada, from Portugal. And this is called Graça da Pedra, and it's 100% Alvarinho from 2022.
I had a sip of it. Just, you know, the acidity is there. It was a little bit more mouthfeel in the mid palate than I was expecting. But yeah, this is just, you know, your classic, a classic well-made Alvarinho. How would you describe it for the listeners?
This wine is, as you mentioned, it's rather more voluptuous, sort of fuller on the palate, a little bit more of a longer, lingering finish, which is typical of Alvarinho from the Mosel and Malgaço region. So, well, this is a little bit further inland in the extreme north of Portugal. So, sort of more of that buttery style, not as, because of, you don't have the influence necessarily in the region of the Atlantic climate, as you were closer to the coast. These wines are made for some aging. The uniqueness of this particular property is that it unlike most other producers in the region, this is high density planting and dry farming.
I was going to say this is classic Alvarinho, but I think I might take a lot of that back. I mean, yes, the acidity is there, but this is not just some steely, you know, super dry, little bit of lemon lime and that's it. As you said, the mouthfeel is much more coated. There is a little almost fennel thing going on the finish of this, and there is more of a linger. Like sometimes I think my criticism, and I get it, of some Alvarinos is when you get sort of the mass produced, you're going to lose quality. That's just sort of the economics of it. There's no way around it. So I think a lot of times when you think Alvarinho, you think just very simple sipping. You don't have to think about it. With this white, it definitely lingers and it definitely stays in the palate longer than a lot of the ones you'll find at the LCBO.
I agree.
And then moving on to the red, which I actually haven't had a chance to smell yet, but what... And by the way, how many years have you guys now been doing this, making these dry whites and reds?
2 years.
Oh, so it's really
over 2 years. It's a relatively recent project for us. The we acquired the company 2.5 years ago. The team stayed on. The entire team at the company stayed on in the different regions. So at Graça da Pedra in the Minho in Vinho Verde, Marcia is the winemaker. She's been the winemaker there for over 10 years, and she does a great, phenomenal job with these wines. And that's all we do. We dedicate 100% of the production is Alvarinho, because that's the only grape that we have planted on the property.
And then on the red, this first, it has that smell, that brambly dark fruit smell that I think a lot of people expect from Portuguese reds. But what's the region? What's the varietal for this 2020?
So the red is called Calcário, and this is a 2020. This is from the wine is from Bairrada. Untypical about this wine is that this wine is made from a Bordeaux blend. It does have d'origine nacional, but it is made from d'origine nacional, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Merlot.
You can definitely get
So you're
A
getting
little of that, you get a little of that earthy mushroom Bordeaux-y thing going on.
exactly. So,
So, sorry to interrupt, is it, and if you don't know the exact specs, that's what Google is for, but is it a Torrega Nacional led and then supported by the Cab and the Merlot?
It's roughly 40% Torrega Nacional, primarily Cabernet Sauvignon, and then Merlot is roughly 20%, 10 to 20%.
How common is that?
It's
For Bordeaux blends in Portugal.
not common at all. The previous owner of the company wanted to have the very best wines of Portugal, and he hired a French winemaker who's still a consulting winemaker for us today, Pascal Chardonnay, who has, besides having his own wines, he was a consulting winemaker at Vega Sicilia for a very long time and has been part of this project since 2009. We have a lot of international grape varietals, such as Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc.
Wait, Pinot Noir in Portugal? I
Absolutely.
have never tried a Portuguese Pinot Noir
Absolutely.
before.
We make sparkling wine called Colinas from the same region, from Bairrada, with Chardonnay and separate wine, Pinot Noir, rosé made from Pinot Noir. And then we have mono varietal, single grape varietal wines from the Down. Quite unique.
That is unique because usually the stereotype and what you get here is it's Torrega Nacional is going to be the main grape, then other versions of that grape. Then on top of that, it's usually all these different local varietals that most wine consumers have no idea about, and it's some sort of field blend. So to have the Bordeaux varietals, and it's nothing against the field blends or the natural grapes of Portugal, but sometimes it's easier to bring people in if there's something more familiar because people get nervous when it comes to wine. So familiar always counts. But yeah, this is the first time I've tried that. Was there any pushback, do you know, among very old school local winemakers when they know that these wines are being out there and being blended like this?
No, it's always tough when you break away from tradition and try to come up with something a little bit different than the status quo from the region. But it was well accepted. These wines are unbelievably well produced, and it's an easier sell. I mean, granted, here in Canada, Alvarinho is already known, but it's an easier draw, if you will, for a consumer that's more familiar with Cabernet Sauvignon or Merlot to sell in by.
Of course. And as I said, that is the tough thing sometimes with Portuguese dry wines is you got to bring people in and that you can have these beautiful products that often also are, in terms of value, are much lower in price than in other parts of the world. I always say that Portugal, the Portuguese reds can be a great alternative for people that, aren't spending 40, $50 on a bottle. So let's move over to, that's cool. And again, these wines, you will be able to find them at the LCBO. I'll make sure on the Instagram to put all the links and everything for that as well. Moving on to the 2019, the late vintage port, 2019. And I know we talked about it before, but if someone is going to be smelling LBV from that year from you guys, what should they be looking for?
We're looking at round fruits, the dark cherry licorice flavors, a great accompaniment with to chocolate cheesecake, or even cheese, different types of cheeses. This is a wine that's available in a 750 ml bottle or half bottle. It's a wine that's ready to drink. We've done the aging for you in perfect conditions at the lodges in Bira Nova Gaia. It's a wine that's aged a minimum 5 years for us. So the wine is blended and bottled on demand. So we always have a fresh vintage in the market. This is a wine that requires no decanting. We've filtered it and stabilized it. So again, once open, you're good to go for anywhere between 6 to 8 weeks. And I find that the half bottle format is just enough for two people that are enjoying late bottle vintage with a cheese platter.
I don't think I've ever used this term before to describe a wine, but LBV is one of the most user-friendly wines out there, as you said, it doesn't need to be decanted. Once it's opened, it can be open for a while. It's very smooth and generous, but it's not sweet. It's not flabby. Like, it really kind of checks a lot of boxes for people.
Absolutely. And obviously it is port. It is sweet. It's sweet in the sense that, you know, it's the natural sugars from the grapes. But in terms of our house style, the Taylor Flagstaff wines tend to be drier in style. So it's not overwhelmingly sweet. Yes, it is a fortified wine, a sweet wine, but on the drier style. And not only this almost you can feel with the acidity and the balanced tannins, you can all have this with like a nice steak.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, oh, 100% you could if you just want to try something different. I was actually going to ask you about food pairings, and we discussed it goes with desserts, it goes with cheeses, it'll go with nuts and things like that. But you're right, you could throw this with a ribeye if you just wanted to try something a little bit different than your classic Bordeaux varietals or a Cabernet or Merlot or something like that. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the final one, what's harvest like for you guys in the Douro? Because it is deep. There is nothing easy. We're not talking about, you know, just flat fields of easy picking with machines being able to go through everything. What's harvest like?
Harvest is super interesting and dynamic in the Douro Valley, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, not only because of the view, but the amount of labor that went into building the stone walls. Everything is terraced. All of the grapes, all of the grapes are picked by hand because we can't get any machinery. So we have harvest is September, usually 3 to 4 weeks. This year we started a bit early because it was a very, very warm and hot summer. So we started at the last week of August. And for us, we have workers come in. Mm-hmm. For about 3 to 4 weeks that pick during the day, early in the day. And then it just gets quite hot toward the afternoon. So they're picking, and the day's picking comes, the grapes come into the traditional wineries that we have at the three Taylor Flagstaff properties. The largest one of the properties is Quinta de Vargelis. It's a property in the state that we've owned since 1893. And so we have a traditional winery, and that property is actually classified as one of the top 25 estates in the world. We still have footreading.
I was going to ask that. How many, because, you know, we've seen the videos of it, how many of your wines are even partially made with the traditional ways of people just, you know, in those rooms stomping on the grapes?
So the very best grapes from the grapes that are from our properties will be picked and brought into the winery, where we have granite lagars, so stone square tubs.
Yeah.
And the day's picking is brought into those lagars. And the picking is done, the winemaker and the viticulturist decide what comes in ahead of time, of schedule, basically. So the blend is actually done in the vineyard and not in the winery. So the grapes come in, and we have 22 people in a granite lagar, 11 on each side, and about the size of this room. And the grapes are placed on the stem. We don't de-stem. And so we have 11 people on one side, 11 on another, in essentially a military march. One, two, one, two. And it's going to take... Though each row of 11 is slowly moving forward in this military march, trying to get your... So you just imagine, picture grapes just below knee level, and you're trying to raise your feet to go above the grapes to crush it. Obviously, it gets easier as you tread. And that, though, the initial part is called the cut. So as those 11 people at each side of the lagar are slowly moving towards the center, that'll take about 2 to 2.5 hours. That's called a crush.
Yeah, just a gentle extraction of the juices, and you're getting a cardio workout.
Exactly. And then Liberty is called, and we have music and alcohol, a lot of booze that comes out. And after the Liberty, we have free tread. So what's essentially happening is during the first 2 to 2.5 hours during the cut, the grapes are shifting towards the corners or the sides of the lagar. So during the last portion, the last 2 hours, to free tread. So you can do the chicken dance, the train. The idea is to keep everyone happy and drinking for the last 2 hours to get the work done. But essentially, the gentleness of the human foot rubbing against the ground, the agar is extracting color and tannins from the grape skins without damaging the seeds. If you bite into a grape seed, you get that bitterness and that astringency, and that's what we don't want in our wines. That and the fact that we didn't have electricity in the Douro Valley until the mid-1970s. So there just wasn't an outlet to plug in your machines.
See, that's great. If I knew that, I forgot that. I love that. That one of the reasons why the foot shredding thing was going on so long was for the simple reason it was hard to have electricity, especially in those areas of Portugal.
And then once electricity came to Vargelas in 1976, and the winemakers basically came to the conclusion that for the style of wines that we make, for the type of wines, which are port wines, where we need to extract color and tannins in the least amount of time, this was a more effective process. And that's what we do still today, although it is more expensive. It's more costly, obviously, because and let's face it, people complain. It's a lot easier to plug in a machine and set it on low, medium, or high. With us, we have across the company with Taylor Flaggate, we have roughly 150 people come in for 3 or 4 weeks. We feed them, we sleep them, we provide port, and then we pay them at the end of the 4 weeks.
That's expensive. That is, absolutely.
But it's crucial for the types of wines and for the quality of the wines that we bring to market.
We end with this. I recommend, I always like with the 20-year Tawny, is it's $70 or so for a bottle, give or take. To me, it's the perfect, and I love the 10-year. I have a couple of your 10-year Tawnies at home. But 20, to me, there still is some fruit. There's still some really just dark cooked plum. But as you mentioned, the orange peel, you're now starting to get some of the other tertiary things. There's just enough fruit with all some of the maturing notes that one would expect from Tawny. It hits a sweet spot for me in terms of flavor profile and price. Always been a fan of the flag. I mean, I've been buying this for years and years. And the 20-year for me hits that perfect note of quality versus the price point of it. So yeah, it's fantastic, a 20-year Tawny.
The 20-year Tawny is what is my favorite. It's one of my favorites. The 20 for me in terms of price quality ratio is amazing. For me, it's just it's liquid creme brulee in the glass.
You know what? Liquid creme brulee in a glass is the perfect way to describe it. There's really not better way. I'm going to tell everyone, go to the LCBO or sylvestre.ca, sylvestre.ca. I'm saying it slowly, but that's you can go to that website. You can find the product. But I also want people to go to that website because maybe it's hard for them to find your Alvarino or your Bordeaux blend as well. So I want to make sure everyone go there, go to the LCBO. Just type in Taylor Flaggate. Eventually, you'll find their product no matter where you are listening to this. George, really appreciate. Actually, before we end, do you have any tips for people that are flying? You fly a lot. Sometimes some people only fly once or twice. Do you have any tips out there for people to make airline travel that at all easier, considering you are an expert at it?
Comfortable clothing and shoes and expect the worst to happen.
That's perfect.
Hydrate.
Yeah. But be careful about if you're hydrating on the port. I would only recommend a little bit off the top and a little bit at the end of a trip.
Exactly.
George, thank you so much being a part of the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.